This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Slice of Anime Life podcast. This is episode 8. I know we've been saying for a few weeks that we would get an animator on to talk about animation. And we finally have that this week. We're really excited to bring my friend, who is an animator, who has worked in anime before. We're excited to bring him on today. So you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, how's it going, guys? My name is Avery, and I am a freelance 2D illustrator and animator. And I've worked on a couple of projects that are in the industry, which has been really great.
Which is super cool. I remember the first time you told me about this, that about what you were doing, and honestly, I wasn't shocked because I knew you were super talented, but I again was taken aback because, you know, to get into the industry like that, and I know you want to kind of get into that more now too, so I'm just excited to even be friends with you, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it, man. It was crazy when I got that offer. It was definitely not something I saw coming, but
yeah,
it's amazing how that can just happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome, even from just my perspective. I don't know too much about the animation side. Of course, I'm just a regular watcher. It doesn't really apply to me, but actually to speak with an animator and to go over maybe details that we might not get on an everyday basis is just going to be cool. So if you don't mind, we're going to roll right into it. Is that cool?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay. So first question I have for you, I have about 7-8 questions. We're just going to roll through them. The first one is, what animes or animators are your favorite? Is there any that have inspired you?
Yeah. Oh man, I got a laundry list. So, when it comes to anime movies, the ones that come to my head, wait, I would probably say Perfect Blue.
Okay.
Red Line, Paprika, Mind Game, Akira, and Digimon, like Our War.
Yes.
Game. Like for those movies, I'm telling you, those are absolutely pivotal. Like I take a lot of my inspiration for those movies. And then
okay.
For shows, let me think. I would say Fooly Cooly. Paranoia Agent,
awesome.
Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, oh for sure. Kaiba, Dan to Dan, and My Hero. Yeah, those are definitely
and Dan to Dan it's a new show. It's the animation style is pretty crazy. It's wicked. It's out there. We haven't seen much like it, to be honest. And it's just incredible. Maybe it's similar to Fooly Cooly, or what's something you can compare it to, you think?
Yeah, I would say that it's unique in the sense, like compared to Fooly Cooly, I would say that it's a departure from what we've gotten like in the past couple of years.
Yep.
I think in the early 2000s to like late 90s, anime was experimenting. It was experimental.
Yes.
And it was something that when you walked into a theater, you didn't really know what you were getting. And I think for better and worse, the anime industry has become a massive, massive lucrative business for Japan. So
yeah,
a lot of the anime we see nowadays, maybe the stories are more unique, but the styles are very similar. So the reason why I gravitated towards Danadan when I first saw like the manga was because it just felt so different than what I was normally getting. And I'm a big sci-fi nerd, and so I was like, this is right up my alley.
And you know, I mean, you don't know everything about my anime taste, but you know that a lot of the shows I like are isekai. And to be honest, as much as I love those shows, we've talked about this, they are so much copy and paste. It is just copy, and you put it out. This is the product. It might not be good. It might be complete garbage, but we're going to put it out anyways just for a cash grab over in Japan. And we will hope, and fingers crossed, we'll hope that it works out in the West too, but for the most part, it doesn't. A lot of the times, it's just an extra show that maybe you'll make it onto Crunchyroll or onto High Dive or something, and in all honesty, those aren't unique. They're not as fun. When you have Donadon, which comes out of nowhere, and it's just crazy on the scene, everyone loves the animation styles, it's really different, and it mashes not only UFOs and sci-fi, but also a little bit of, like, dark horror, not really horror, but, like, dark thriller and, like, creepy ghost stuff. Like, it's just cool. It's something you wouldn't expect to be mashed up together.
Right. No, exactly. And it's definitely like a good fusion that I personally like to see a lot. And I don't know, it kind of came out of nowhere, or in the perfect time when we, at least in the West, were craving something more than what we've been getting.
Yeah.
And I feel like, well, and that just goes to show why, like, because I'm assuming you've heard of G-Kids, the distribution center.
Yep.
That, like, okay. So it just goes to show that when they when they re-release, like, movies, like, you know, animes that are typically not as talked about, they still fill out seats, you know?
Of course.
People in the West are craving this. And I think we're slowly starting to see a shift in what we're going to be seeing. Because, like I said, it's a market, and they need to be lucrative. So
of course,
seeing that we kind of media, I think, is going to lend a change in how we see anime in the next 10 to 15 years.
I agree. I completely agree. What I will say, extra one. Go ahead, finish what you're saying.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I totally forgot. I definitely got to shout out some of my favorite animators before I forget.
Let's do it.
So, Satoshi Kon. So he is the mastermind behind works like Perfect Blue, Paranoid Agent,
yep,
Paprika, Millennial Actress. Millennium Actress, my bad. He is just... his work was amazing, and it was really just taking... it was really diving into, like, society in Japan and the turn of the millennium. So I think that was really cool seeing his work. And then Katsuhiro Otomo, I mean... come on, he did Akira. I mean, there's not a lot we need to say about that, but I mean, the influence that Akira alone has had on my upbringing and just in general is just immense.
Heck
yeah. And then Yutaka Nakamura, he is like, I don't want to say he's not the godfather of impact frames and effects, but he certainly pioneered it in the sense that way we see it today. Like, for example, well, I'm an effects animator primarily, but I do character animation. But
yeah.
That is a reason why I gravitate towards his work and then movies like Redline, because, like, they really show the weight and speed behind characters' movements. And also, he was, I'm pretty sure he is the one that created the block effect. So when you, like, when a character goes to, like, punch,
yes,
and then, like, the debris becomes, like, blocks and squares.
We see a lot of that. We see a lot of that in One Piece. I've seen a lot of that in Black Clover.
Yep.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
So he is just insane. He
wow.
is so good. So I highly recommend anyone who's listening to this to check out those three animators. I mean, their work is just breathtaking.
Okay, quick question. If you had to pick any of the movies you listed earlier, for someone brand new to anime, out of all the movies you listed, what's the one they should go watch first? What's, like, their go-to for maybe a new watcher? What's one that you listed that would be good for a new watcher?
Yeah, so a lot of the ones I listed, I would say are really good milestones in your journey. But if you're starting off fresh off the block and you don't really know where to start, I would say Digimon: Our War Game.
Cool.
Because it's a franchise that a lot of people know.
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee, rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free, silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
The Digimon are just sick. I mean, and their designs are like next level. And
it's got the nostalgia factor too.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Awesome. I would say that would be a really, out of all the movies I listed, that would definitely be a good one. And the next one would be Akira. I'd say those two would probably be the good starter pack.
Cool. Well, check those out. We're going to move on here. A couple quick questions. So, first and foremost, when did you know you wanted to be an animator, and how did you get introduced to it? How did you get introduced into animation?
Yeah, so I've according to my mom, I've been drawing since I was three. So every moment I could as a kid into my adulthood, I've been drawing every chance I can.
Yep.
It is truly a deep love and passion of mine. But when I knew I wanted to be an animator was probably around, I want to say, middle of high school, because for the majority of my life, I thought I was going to be a tattoo artist.
Gotcha. I remember you bringing that up to me.
Yeah.
That was a possible goal of yours, or a possible journey forward would maybe be a tattoo artist.
Yeah, and honestly, for the majority, I would say the majority of my teenage years into high school,
yep,
I wanted to be a tattoo artist because, I don't know, I loved drawing, I loved designing, and in my mind, the next evolution in that step was to, like, create beautiful pieces that are permanent, you know, on people's bodies. And I thought that was going to be something I was definitely going to get into, and I had some things lined up, but I don't know. It was, I really want to say what really made me switch into animation was a class project somewhere, I think around sophomore to junior year.
Okay.
When we were asked what we wanted to do. And I really reflected on it. And I was like, well, do I want to be a tattoo artist? And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. But like, I've never given myself a chance to think about anything else. Like, what else can I do with my craft? And my mind went to the countless like movies I watched growing up, and I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to be able to make my characters and other people's characters come to life. Like, and ever since then, it's been that. It's been that sole focus.
And that mindset too is not a bad one to have, because of course if you hypothetically, if you had become a tattoo artist, you would be able to make a huge impact on the individuals, right? Like, every individual tattoo you would do, you'd make a huge impact, especially since I know you do a great, great work, and there are tattoo artists out there that really don't care and really don't do great work. I know that you would have been, I know that you would have been one that would have cared and done really great work and would have had a large impact on people's lives. But now, you can be in the realm of, you're going to do something even bigger than just being an individual tattoo artist. You're going to put out products for people that can impact multiple people's lives. And it's,
right.
I mean, again, I'm not saying one is weighted more than the other. There are great tattoo artists that deserve the praise, and there are great animators that deserve the praise. But I think that being an animator maybe is more catered towards what I won't say what you're born to do, but maybe what you were born to do, you know? Like, I will say it then.
Go ahead, yeah.
No, I was just saying, yeah, I'll just say maybe what you're born to do.
No, and honestly, as cliche as that sounds, I think you really are right.
Yeah.
Like, I really do think I was put on this earth to do that. And it's just because, like, ever since I was a kid, I've always tried to continuously push myself.
Yeah.
Like, I would always set a bar for myself, and then once I reached it, I needed to continuously go further and surpass it. And I think that was where my brain went to with animation, you know, like it's the continuous love of learning and like making myself better as an artist. And in my opinion, and this is me, but I knew that like illustrating is now just a step in the process, because as an animator and making sure I want everything I create to look as good as possible, every single frame I draw, I want to be able to print out and frame.
Of course,
so
yeah.
It's really what I've been doing for years, but applying motion and gravity and impact, and it's cool because now I have dipped my toes in a complete different, you know, pool. Like I'm learning so many things. Every single time I create an animation, I learn something brand new. So it's kind of fun and exciting to be back. I don't want to say at ground zero, but at a playing field where I'm still learning and like enjoying the process, because obviously as an illustrator, I'm still learning and pushing myself, but in animation it's a complete different ball game, you know? So it's really cool to like apply what I've learned throughout my entire life and then continuously push myself to make great stuff.
And the other thing I'll add too, just because is you can always still, if you wanted to, you're talented enough and you know a lot about art, you know a lot about structure, you know a lot about what you want to do going forward, you could still do some tattoos. You know, in reality, you still could. Like, you're talented enough to do it. Again, I think animation is obviously more your speed and something you're going to do for the rest of your life, but I remember even talking to you about designing tattoos still. Maybe designing a tattoo for me. So, I mean, it's not something you can't do. You're kind of in a position to be a jack of all trades. Maybe you can't necessarily be in the position to, like, actually tattoo people whenever you want. But, I mean, it's not off the table. You're talented enough to do it. You just would, you know, need to know a couple steps or who knows. Maybe you already know the steps and you just never got fully into it.
Yeah, and it's actually really cool you say that, because I do know a couple of people who have like offered like, hey, if you want an apprenticeship, I mean, please let me know and we'll get things situated.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool, because, you know, I mean, just because I've wanted my life to revolve around art since I was, you know, cognizant.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I need to stay in one lane.
Oh, yeah.
Like I might be animating for the next years and then just say, you know, I've had fun, this has been great, and switch my entire career into oil painting.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something beautiful about being an artist. You know, I don't know. I think some artists want to stay in one field, and that's not wrong by any means. I think staying in that particular medium for your entire life and honing your craft is so beautiful, because there is a level of dedication that no one will understand with that. But like on the contrary to that too, I think it's also just as beautiful to experiment and try things that you normally wouldn't, or go back to things that you enjoy, you know?
Would you also say that those people might be limiting their potential too, though? I completely agree with you, because I think that, you know, and it's not even just for artists, it can be for teachers, it can be for whoever. Like, if you stay in your lane per se, or like you said, if you stay in your medium for that long, you are honed in on what you do, you become an expert. But then maybe you would also be limiting yourself to learn new things. Everyone deserves the chance to learn and to grow, whether that be in art, whether that be, I mean, heck, even at a factory, everyone deserves to learn and have the opportunity to change. And I think it definitely, the mindset of staying in one place for so long is super inspiring and great, but there's also the thought of maybe getting bored or slacking off, because now you there's nothing else to learn and you feel like you're this great master, when in reality you just are losing it, might need to learn some new things. I don't know.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the really cool things about being an artist is that there truly is no right path.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like that there are some people that will stick to one particular thing, and they have surpassed experts. They are truly just like immaculate with the brush, or immaculate with the pencil, or et cetera, whatever craft. And I think that they are 100% valid in doing that. And that's why, like, I know that I'm different in the sense that I love art. Like, in the sense that, like, there is not one particular medium that I truly love the most. Like, right now, I love animation. I am deeply in love with animation. And that, like I said a second ago, I might pivot when I'm later in life and decide to be a tattoo artist, or decide to be, you know, like, I think the more we try to plan our future, the more it starts to devour us in the sense that we are scared to try things that we normally wouldn't. So, and that's why, like, in this moment, I like to say that I am deeply in love with animation, because I am. And I would love to touch base, you know, 5 years from now, 15 years from now, you know. So, and to circle back to what you said, I think it's a double-edged sword. They might limit themselves in the sense that they might not be able to apply their skills, like, in a versatile way, but if you're an expert in what you do, theoretically, you shouldn't have to do anything else, you know? So if they do spend their years forever honing that, 9 times out of 10, they probably wouldn't need to be a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on the person and their own independent journey, you know?
No, I completely get it. I was going to cut you off, but I'm glad that I didn't. I was going to say, if you had to choose any part of your art, like, anything that you've ever done, if you had to choose, like, what's the one thing you think you are best at, or what's your favorite thing to do? It can be, you know, your just regular illustrations, your daily illustrations. Is it the new animations that you love so much that is, like, your favorite thing to do? What do you think is your expertise at this moment, if you have one? You're not a full-on expert, but, I mean, what do you think that you're best at right now at this moment?
Absolutely. So, I honestly, if I... My answer to that would just be paper and pencil illustration.
Okay.
That is something that I've fortunately have honed over the past X amount of years of my life.
That's like your bread and butter, right?
Right. And no, okay. 100%. Like, if you were to ask me to draw something, I am proud to say that with all confidence, I could draw that for you.
Yeah.
And that – so – putting everything else in my life aside that's artistically inclined, I would say paper and pencil illustration is just what I excel at.
Cool.
And I think I probably do enjoy that the most, in the sense that it's the most relaxing.
Yeah.
Like, I can sit down and open my sketchbook and do a highly rendered drawing on my sketchbook. And to me, I find that relaxing because I don't have to learn anything, if that makes sense. Yep. I already know how to do it. So my brain can kind of enter this, like, this fugue state and just go, you know?
Of course.
Whereas animation, the reason why I love that so much is because I don't know everything. I don't know how to do everything. So I'm continuously pushing myself, which is why I am, like, I'm doing that more often now, because there is... Every time I open up my animation program, there's a new hurdle.
Yeah.
So it's fun to overcome that and get better at it.
And I know we were talking, there obviously have been some projects you've been working on. There's some animes you've been a part of. We're going to kind of get into that side right now, if you don't mind. The first question, though, I want to ask is, what is it like working in anime, and is it easy getting those jobs? Like, I know you got maybe a couple jobs or a couple roles that you acquired over the last year or two, but was it easy? And what is it like working in the field of anime?
Absolutely. So it was, I feel like my case is similar to several of other animators who have worked in the anime industry, where I worked for a project about, I want to say, oh my gosh, yeah, it's been almost four years now.
Yeah.
No, three years ago, I worked on a project pro bono, like just for fun. Like, I wanted to help this artist out and help him with his vision. So I animated a project for him. And so he knew someone else that was trying to get a project off the ground, and it was just starting and they needed animators. So I was like, yeah, of course, I've got a little bit of time. I can hop on that.
Yeah.
So I hop on to her project, which for context, that is now my freelance director. I hop on her project to help her out with that. And I get to know her more over the past couple of years and help with a couple of shots on that project. And she was able to find a lot of great connections in the industry. And so she came to us and said, would you guys like to work on, you know, said projects? And that's pretty much how it happened. I mean, I knew someone who got me in contact with someone, and then she got me in contact with them. So it's been one of those very fortunate situations where I just knew the right person going into the right field at the right time.
What I will say, though, is not to toot your horn or anything, but yes, you were fortunate, but I wouldn't you ever use the word lucky, because of course they had to see the product that you're putting out and know that it's good enough to then pass you along. You know, because if you weren't a good animator, I'm sure this person would not have passed you along and said, hey, they're looking for animators, because of course that would also tarnish your reputation. You know, they obviously know you put out a good product. They know that you're extremely talented. And so even though you are fortunate, that doesn't mean that, you know, again, things happen for a reason, and you know, you're good enough at your craft to get those roles or get those jobs, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I would say that that definitely helped. And
yeah.
I am primarily the studio's effects animator.
Yeah.
So that actually was how I was able to land one of the roles for a project I worked on, was because of my effects animation.
Okay.
So it was really cool, because I'll look at my work sometimes and I'll be like, oh, you know, that's okay. I think I need to push this a little bit more. I need to try something different, you know. But it's really encouraging to have my director like look at my work, and especially my effects animation.
Yep.
And really see the skill and the ability that I have, that sometimes I need to see myself sometimes. So it's really cool that she was able to get me that role, because that was a really big, really big deal for me, because that was one of the rare instances where I kind of got the reins on how I wanted it to animate.
Yeah.
And that's very rare to happen. Like, being able to animate a shot how you think it should be animated doesn't happen very often. And not for a bad reason. It's just because the projects animators work on need to align cohesively, so when it's, you know, finished, it looks like it belongs part of the same project, of course. But I was given a very unique ability on a couple of shots I've done for her and for the studio, that I was able to just do the effects animation how I wanted it to, and it ended up being the final product. So
awesome.
That really was a big boost in confidence moving forward.
Yeah, it's like using what you put out as the final product. That's got to be
exactly
just an amazing feeling, to where, you know, now they can definitely trust me. If they didn't trust me before, they definitely can now, because they like what I'm putting forth, and that's always great. So I guess I'm not confused, because I kind of figured this is how it works, but So when you're doing these animes or these projects, a lot of the times you're working with a lot of other freelance animators.
Correct.
Or so
go
ahead.
I'll go ahead and walk you through the process.
Yeah.
So our studio is given the opportunity to work on an anime, okay?
Yep.
And so at that point, we would say yes or no. If we say yes, then there's a testing period. So at that point, that's when we, or for most part, there's a testing period. Sometimes
okay.
you can bypass that if the studio sees your work and likes it enough. But bigger studios will need a testing period because obviously they're not going to bring just any team onto the project
yeah.
because this is the reputation, etc. So there's a testing period, and that's where the selected animators who want to join the project will submit a test shot for whatever position they want to work on. So we are usually offered low, which is layout, and that's essentially the stage where the studio sends us a storyboard, and we need to make a cleaner version of that storyboard.
Gotcha.
That has keyframes, that gives you perspective of the cameras, dialogue, mouth movement, etc. So it's basically laying the groundwork for the next step.
Yeah.
So there's that position, which is called layout. And then there's Genga, which is basically where we go over the layout and make the lines cleaner, tie it down, etc. So those are two of many positions that are offered to studios.
Okay.
And so the artist or animator would then apply in that testing period for those said positions. And if the studio, you know, likes it, they want to move forward, then you'd move on to the next step, which is where you meet with the studios. And I've been a part of two meetings with studios, and that's, I would say, one of the drawbacks is because obviously we're meeting with people in Japan.
Yeah.
So the time difference is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So you have to be in the meeting, you have to be like present and ready for like questions and answers. And also there's a translator, so
yeah,
they're going to talk in Japanese, and then there's gonna be a translator that will tell us exactly what they're saying so we can relay that to the rest of the team.
So they're are they talking to each of you individually, or do you guys have generally one person speak for your studio?
Yeah, so in the meetings, it's all of the animators that are going to be a part of that said section of the project.
Yep.
And our director, Kennedy, and she is spearheading the conversations, obviously.
Okay, cool.
So she's the one that they're going to primarily be talking back and forth with, and then we will be there to, like, acknowledge what they're saying.
And maybe give input or – yeah, okay.
Right, right. So that's that step, and then we move on to actually doing the work.
Okay.
And this is where, like, the real challenge begins. So sometimes we're provided storyboards that look pretty good.
Yep.
And cohesive, so we know how to translate off the character sheets we're given and move forward. However, there are some instances where the storyboards are pretty close to chicken scratch.
Gotcha.
So it's so I fortunately have not had to deal with that. I have been fortunate that the projects I've worked on, the storyboards were cohesive enough, illustrated well enough with dialogue that I knew was going to happen. So
yeah.
I didn't have to ask my director so many questions, but I know that there's been projects where people have had to like really go back and forth because they have no idea what's happening. But I would say that's the next step is doing the work.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a project by project base. You could get one cut or you could get 20 plus cuts. It really
yeah.
just depends on what the studios agree to and the budgets and et cetera. So a cut is basically, and you probably know this already. But,
yeah, a little bit, but I still want you to share.
Yeah. So let's say, for example, you are, the camera is focused on the main character talking, okay? Yep. And then they're done talking and it switches to their friend. That is two cuts.
Yeah.
So the minute the scene changes is considered a cut.
Gotcha.
So I would say, honestly, from my experiences personally, obviously everyone is going to have different experiences, but I would say a common thing a lot of animators in the West who are getting into anime, the anime industry, one of the harder aspects, not necessarily is the illustration part. Like, we can draw the characters on model pretty easily. It's actually, like, translating all of the written, because everything is given to us in Japanese. So we have to translate all of the dialogue and all of the notes from Japanese. So it's translating it, understanding the translation.
And that's tough, and too, properly, sometimes.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it's honestly, it really is. I mean, like, and then, like, also learning the anime pipeline is different than the Western pipeline. So it's trying to learn that and making sure you're, like, ticking every box properly, because I would say a majority of the work comes in everything else that's delivered along with the animation or the layouts, etc. So it's a pretty tough field. This is not a secret. Everyone knows that anime in Japan is being, like, pumped out at an insanely high rate. Yeah. And there's not really an exception for us in the West. Now, I will say we are very fortunate to have a director who puts our health first. So, like, she communicates with us the level of difficulty with the project, time framing needs to be done, taking into consideration that, you know, we need to live, and
of
we don't,
course.
A lot of us have full-time jobs. So, we are blessed in that sense where we have someone that understands how stressful it is, but, people who, like, are in the anime industry in Japan, I truly cannot imagine how
what
they
they're
can
going
survive.
Through. Yeah.
Oh, it is. What I have felt on the two projects I worked on is nothing compared to what they feel every day. So it's definitely a field where it's great because you learn a lot. You become more proficient as an artist and animator. You learn how an industry works overseas, because that is a really big deal.
Yep.
But it definitely takes a certain kind of mindset. Like, I highly recommend anyone who is trying to get into it, not necessarily make it your primary source of income or livelihood, because the amount of cuts you'll need to do to survive is insanity.
Yeah.
And that's another thing to circle back to as well. And this is also not a secret. We know that the anime industry does not pay well.
No, I was gonna say that they're notorious, and I mean they even make. Don't they even joke? I mean, I've seen so many animes where they even have joked about this in the anime. It doesn't matter if you're even an animator or if you're like working at a business in Japan, they'll always joke about how people are overworked, underpaid, and they just have no home life at all. They either go to the bar and then go straight home, or they just go straight home and sleep and redo that every single day. And like I said, I'm pretty sure I've seen the animators get made fun of in shows about how much they have to work and how little money they make.
It's true. It's legitimately true. I mean, there is countless productions. Like, this is not an outlier where there'll be animators who work like 10 to 14 hours straight, go take a break at the bar with their coworkers, and then go straight back to the studio and maybe get an hour nap in if they're lucky, you know? So I want the optimist in me is hoping to see the change in the couple studios that are popping up in Japan where they prioritize their health and the livelihood of their employees. Like, one of them being Sai and Saru, like the ones that are behind the Scott Pilgrim versus the World anime, yep. and Donadon and a lot more. So, but with that being said, the studios need to make money. And so that's why it's an unfortunate machine that needs to be oiled constantly.
Yeah.
So unless there's massive change from the top down, which you could say that about every industry and every mm-hmm. company, but I am optimistically hoping to see a change that prioritizes the health and livelihood of animators in the next like decade or so.
And
because of the studios that we are seeing pop up that are prioritizing it.
And one thing that could change it too is, you know, as anime gets more popular, I mean, within the last 5 years, it's really skyrocketed. And we can thank certain animes. We can thank One Piece. We can thank My Hero Academia. We can thank whoever. But in reality, we have to thank the studios as a whole, regardless of, you know, their treatment of people. Obviously, how some studios treat their animators is god-awful. And I obviously don't condone that, and I hope they, again, can oil it and continue to change. But I think, as a whole, if anime continues to grow, maybe they can make more money and they can be better for their animators, give their animators maybe better health care and less strict hours, and maybe be more lenient on certain set times or dates where they need to get something turned in by or they need something to get done. They can limit that, I think. Maybe the
absolutely
it can get in the head in the right area.
I really think that a good change would be limiting the output of anime and just really focusing on like smaller projects with a bigger budget and bigger, you know, getting like bigger talents or really showing the talents of the studios, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, like I said, I do think we are seeing, I don't want to say a shift in talent and output because that's been there from the start. But I think the Western's receptiveness to projects like Fearin or Dungeon Meshi is showing that we appreciate stories that have, you know, obviously that are well written with good character development, but also branch away from the typical style that we see, you know, pumped out left and right.
Yeah.
Like, we like to be, you know, embraced by new projects. And I think that's starting to actually sink in Japan. So I'm hoping that we're going to continue to get more projects that are pushing the envelope and not just, you know, doing the next isekai, which I do love as much as the next person, but like branching out a little bit more, trying new things.
We cannot keep having, and again, this takes a lot for me to say because I do love isekai and stuff, but we can't keep having shows that have like deadlines where their animators have to get it done in a couple months, so it's not that great. And then the titles like "I turned myself into a vending machine and I'm traveling the world," like, or which is a real one, which is a real one.
It is.
I've seen clips, or something,
man.
as stupid as "my mother got reincarnated as a tree," like. It's just like it's as if someone's in a room or they're just walking around outside, they look out there and be like, you know, we could make an anime about someone getting reincarnated into a bush. Like, maybe that'd be kind of cool. But eventually it would have to be able to walk around and talk, and we also have to make a bunch of cute anime girls, and it's like, come on, dude, just stop with the tropes, stop with making animators draw this stuff. And get to the good nitty gritty. Like, we want the good stuff.
Exactly, and I think that's why it's not. It has to be said for something that a lot of anime fans tend to go back in time to watch something, and this is not the old head in me. I mean, I'm only 25, God. But you know
You're
what
good.
I mean. Like, it's not me saying, oh, we used to have it so good, nothing's good anymore today. Because that's not true. Because it really isn't. But in that time frame, anime was like a Wild West in the sense that they were just throwing anything at the wall and to see what stuck. So styles were different.
Yeah.
Dialogue was weird. Storylines were super out there. You know, animation was like fun, fresh, unique. Like, and you're still seeing that today a little bit, but it's not the norm. And now we're just seeing copy paste face onto new character.
We don't get like the we no longer have like that Cowboy Bebop, you know, like we don't have those type of shows to where something can stick out and feel Western and feel good and still have like a feeling of, oh my goodness, this anime is going to be popular and strong for 20 years and it's going to outlive me. Like, we don't have those solid picks until since like 2008, maybe even early 2010s. We haven't, maybe, I guess Attack on Titan and certain ones, but like, we really don't have the giant shows that are going to stand the test of time. Even My Hero Academia, as much as I love it, like, I don't, there's just certain shows that I don't know if they have the same gusto or flavor as, say, an old Bleach or a One Piece. And as much as me being a One Piece fan, there is still a major difference feel between old One Piece and new One Piece. It's the same, but it's still updated. It's different. And a lot of people will continually tell me that they go back and watch the old One Piece episodes all the time because it just has a good feeling. It just makes you feel good.
And I think we, I don't know how to put it. Like, I think it's partially because of the anime industry getting rid of like auteurs in the sense that like, there isn't a singular artist that's driving their style forward into the medium.
Yeah.
You know, it's talented artists working to homogenize themselves with other styles that are was seen throughout the industry.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around where I am Avery Krall going into the anime industry providing my specific style.
Yeah.
No, I am myself providing the style of the studio.
Yeah.
So I think the more projects where risks are taken and artists get to push their unique flavor forward, I think that's when we're going to start seeing a bigger change.
Yeah, I was going to... Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was saying, I was going to ask you if there was ever a chance. I'm going to get into just a quick question of like, what have you worked on? What animes or animation projects are you currently working on? What have you done? But I was going to also ask, were you ever given a chance to put your own style in those? Or was it more or less, like you said, copy and paste, doing exactly what the studio wants or exactly what the Japanese studio wants because that's just how it is?
Yeah, so I will
You don't have to share every project. Yeah, you don't have to share every project. Yeah. Just maybe give me a few things you've worked on or even if it's so your own personal projects too.
Absolutely. So I will talk about the two projects that I've worked on that have released publicly. So the first one being Rurouni Kenshin, and that is from the newest season. That I worked as a layout artist for that, and that was a case where I needed to follow the studio style.
Yeah.
Because this is a recognizable character. We need to, when you see Kenshin, you need to see him.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the villain, you need to see him.
Yes.
You know, so that was a case where like I said, I'm fortunate where I can draw almost any character in the style of that character.
Yeah.
So that's where my skill was definitely utilized, where I took the storyboards and I made them cleaner for the next step. And that was a case where it was to the T. Like, you can't go off model. This is how we need to look, etc. Which...
Gotcha.
Circling back, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
You want to keep it cohesive. Another project that's released in Japan is a Dragon Quest movie, and that is where I got to work as an effects animator. And that was, like I said, one of the rare moments where they were giving me the direction of, like, this character. So, for example, this character is running through, like, rain or, yeah, like, a scene where there's water on the ground. So I had to draw water, like, movement. And then there is also, like, this really cool moment where the villain is, like, doing energy blast. So I had to draw, like, I had to animate the skin on his hand disintegrating, like, peeling off and disintegrating. Wow. Which was awesome, dude. It was sick.
That is crazy.
By far one of my favorite projects.
Can I ask you, though, real quick? I hate to break it up for a second.
No, go for it.
Like, how much pressure is that on you? Like, how much pressure is that to... Now, like, what do you think happens if they're like, you know, this isn't good enough? Do they make you restart over? Like, do they reach for somebody else? Like, how much pressure is that on you?
So, it's kind of like, it is quite a bit of pressure. Like, because obviously, I am being asked to work on this project because I have the ability of effects, like lightning, water, smoke, etc. That's what I do best. And I'm clearly asked by my director for a reason because she sees, you know, my talent and my skills.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's like, well, now I have to create this. Like, sure, I'm an effects animator, but that doesn't come into play until I actually create the effects.
Of course.
So it's that moment where I'm like, okay, this is no longer on anyone's shoulders but myself.
Yeah.
So I just, in that moment, I take a deep breath, several deep breaths,
yeah,
to really just realize this project is not going to get done unless I deliver a product that's worth putting forward.
Yeah.
So I don't overthink it, and I just do it. Now, I mean, that I get to have that ability because effects animation kind of – it comes more naturally to me.
Yeah.
So I am fortunate with that situation where I was able to kind of just lean into my abilities and not have to stress as much. But it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure because not only am I – keeping the reputation of myself up, I also have to keep the studio standards up,
yeah,
as well as my director, because my director contacted me and I'm a reflection of the studio, and the studio is how we get work.
Exactly.
So if I don't deliver, it's gonna
bad reflection on the studio. Yeah,
right. It's not gonna be received well for the studio. So it's just one of those moments where if I have doubt, I really just got to put it aside and just do it.
Yeah.
And I would say that might go away with time. Like I said, I'm new to the industry. I've only really been a part of it for a year.
Yeah.
But maybe seasoned veterans don't have to worry about it. But I think it is – I don't know. It's just one of those moments where, you've got – the livelihoods of like your teammates on the line. So it's, yeah, really just realizing that you were asked for a reason. So show them why you were asked. Yeah. And I did. I really did enjoy that. The effects on that shot, like I went above and beyond. And I would do it again. It was very stressful, and not because I was having a harder time with the animation, but because of deadlines.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Anyone who works in the anime industry, wherever you are in the world, will know that the hardest part about the industry will be deadlines.
Yeah.
You can be the best artist animator in the world, and it is so easy to crack under the pressure they give you.
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
It's just it really is just trying to take deep breaths,
yeah,
and take it in stride,
I mean,
you know, and be efficient.
To be honest, your input is just awesome. I'm so glad that we've been able to have this talk so far. I'm going to kind of wind us down a little bit. I have a couple short questions to go through, and then we can get you on your way. And in all honesty, this has been one of the best episodes that we've done so far. So again, really appreciate you coming on.
I really appreciate that.
Checking it out. I'm going to give you a chance here. I'm going to ask you this question. What's your goals going forward? What are your plans going forward? And again, this is where if you want to, regardless of how big our audience is, if you want to plug yourself, if you want to share some individual projects you're working on, it doesn't have to be super detailed or anything, but if you'd like to plug yourself or just give us a thought of what your plans are going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have several things I'm currently working on personally.
Yep.
But some of the biggest is I'm working on a series called Devour.
Okay.
It's been in production for a couple years now because I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I do work a full time job. So yeah. Animating for clients is actually my freelance position I do on the side.
Yep.
So finding the time to really sit down and work on my personal projects definitely is a hard hurdle to work with, but I still do it, and that is a project that I'm really excited about.
Awesome.
So that is a story I'm working on in the background, and then I am currently working on an animated series.
Okay.
Which I am very excited to announce. I'm hoping to announce that optimistically March of next year.
Cool.
March or April time, and then release it the following year. So
awesome.
It's a pretty big endeavor, and that circles back to what are my goals. Honestly, it is just to keep pushing myself and to get better at this craft. I love animation. It's truly a deep passion of mine, and by bringing the ideas and projects into my head, from my head into life, it kind of gives me that chance to do both, where I get to fulfill the projects I've always wanted to see done while also pushing myself and my animation abilities.
Yeah.
So, and the cool thing is working on it over time, I'm just getting better and better. So hopefully when it does release, when the animated series releases, it will be, you know, even better than where I'm at now, you know?
Yeah.
So that is like one of my biggest goals, is just to continuously push myself as an artist.
Well, all I know is that we love having passionate people on the podcast. From throughout this episode, I've just felt that, and obviously we've been friends for a long time. I feel that every single time I talk to you, especially when we talk about anime or animation styles, or when you just give me updates on your life and how things are going. Honestly, it's amazing to see how far you've come, and again, I know you've heard this from so many people around you, but again, I'm proud of you. I think it's awesome what you do. It's so different. It's very unique. Even though a lot of people do it, to me, it still feels very unique. What I will do kind of to end the podcast, I'll give you one more question. We'll talk about something non-animation related. Give you a little de-stress. We'll talk about something else. I thought about throwing this in. Again, if you don't have the best answers for it, that's fine, but last month, we obviously had been talking a little bit about Pokemon cards. And we've been talking a lot about Pokemon, and I wanted to get your opinion right here on the podcast about scalpers, about Pokemon scalpers. I had made the comment to you that I had not found cards for months, and I felt as though, you know, how Pokemon and those dang scalpers were continuing to take things away from us card TCG fans, and I wanted to hear your opinion or your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I will give a shorter answer to that,
because
I could definitely spiral on that. But it is truly unfortunate. Like the other day, I was with my buddy, and I was just like reminiscing. I mean, call it nostalgia. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was reminiscing as a kid. I remember going to Kmart, man.
Yes.
To Kmart. And going in the, like, card section, and it just being stacked. And obviously Pokemon was still massive back then, but the people who were buying it, at least from what I saw as a kid, were people who were fans.
Yeah.
And I remember so vividly my brother and I getting a twin pack. Like, it was like one of the earliest versions of two booster packs in one. And I don't remember the set, but it had Celebi on it, because Celebi was my favorite mythical.
Yeah.
So it was just such a, in my opinion, a beautiful moment where, like, our mom took us there after grocery shopping. We were good. We got to go get the pack, the booster bundle, and we each got a pack. And opening it, I don't know, man. It was just something I don't think a lot of kids get to experience.
It was a different,
you know, nowadays.
It was a different feeling, and it felt good to see the blisters of the booster packs up on the wall. Every time you go in there, there was always going to be some ready for you, and the only people that were buying them were fans. Doesn't matter if you were fans of the anime. It didn't matter if you were fans of the TCG. It did not matter if you were just a random person at Walmart or Kmart or wherever you were at. You generally would always find cards. But yet people have pushed this narrative of trying to just make money off of everything that's popular. And I hate to say it, because I truly think it maybe stems from like Logan Paul and all these people doing these streams where they sell cards for four times the price, or they sell packs online, and it just got everybody thinking that, oh, I can do that. I'll go to my store or go to Costco and buy up all the cards and try to sell them individually. And it just feels wrong. It just deeply feels wrong as a fan.
And it feels like it also stems from some this is just an observation, so I could be completely wrong, and I would love to know what other people think about this, but I feel like it stems from the shift in entertainment. Like, Pokemon in the West is still thriving. It is absolutely a major force in the West, okay?
Yeah.
That's without question. But it seems like now, whereas when we were growing up, it seemed like our friends, each other, were buying cards. We were trading. We were battling. We were mostly trading. But it was in the sense that our generation, us as like kids and teenagers, were buying them. And it seemed like over the past couple of years, we don't see that anymore. Like, we're seeing, from what I can observe, primarily adult fans either buying because they love Pokemon still, or they're scalping. We're not really seeing like kids or teenagers really invested in Pokemon like we were. And because I think that has something to do with, it's not really, it could be multiple things. I mean, the future generations and our current generations now of kids are constantly bombarded by just an absolute absurd amount of media.
Yeah.
So whereas we were given a select amount as a kid that was funneled through a single source as the store or TV, you know, and like the channels we watched, now I feel like kids are constantly given just a crap ton of media to pick and choose from.
Yeah.
So Pokemon could be one of those medias where kids don't even gravitate towards to anymore.
They don't.
You know?
I mean, I've had these conversations with my students, and to be honest, many don't really connect with Pokemon anymore. In fact, I feel very strongly that Pokemon itself, now the main, I guess their main cash cow is us adults. Their main demographic who they're trying to sell to, their cash cow is people like us. In their late 20s, early 30s, people who grew up on Pokemon, they don't have the same...
Exactly.
The Pokemon anime was never the same. You know, the TCG now feels like they're only putting out each new set for money. Like, back in the day, it felt like they are putting this out for the fans. They're putting it out for us. Now it truly feels, and again, some of the new cards are still great, but sometimes it feels like they even have their own deadlines, and they're like, we're just pushing this out, regardless if the cards or the Pokemon characters are great. Like, we're just going to push it out because we need to make money, or we need to get this stuff out already.
Exactly. And it's just unfortunate because, like, and as sad as this sounds, and I know that this is, I don't know, I feel like Pokemon needs to die in order to be reborn or stay dead. Like, there, I understand the appeal in trying to keep something alive as long as possible for, like, multiple generations, but we can clearly see that there's a disconnect in the younger audiences.
Yeah.
Like, you can even see that the majority of ads for Pokemon feature adults.
Of course.
Or, like, maybe a late teen. Like, you don't really see kids in ads anymore.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so I really think they know that the demographic for this is no longer kids. And I don't know. I think they're, it's okay for something to have a lifespan. It's okay to shine really bright for a period of time and then go away.
And maybe,
and the problem is, oh, go ahead.
I was saying, and maybe it'd be okay if it was just on the Western side. Like, maybe, like, in Japan, it could still be how what's always been. In the Western side, maybe it'd be nice for us to take a step back and say, do we need a new game? Do we need new sets? Maybe we should just appreciate what we have. Or go over and above, and Pokemon needs to come out with a new way of getting people to love Pokemon, a new way of getting kids to be excited. And I don't want to say this because, you know, and again, I loved some of the Pokemon movies, but maybe they could do something similar to, like, Superman, to where I didn't think Superman's super big for a lot of young kids, to be honest. Superman's been a thing for a long time, it has. But I've seen numerous young people, young kids, and even young adults that just loved the Superman movie, or just loved those type of comics, and eventually are now trying to get their kids to love those comics and to love the character. Like, why couldn't we come up with a way of pushing Ash or pushing Pokemon as a whole and say, and just make sure that it's new for the kids, something that they want to be a part of, something that they want to see. I feel like they aren't catering to the kids anymore, and that's how they're going to keep their fan base. Otherwise, it's only going to become more scalpers and more people, because guess what? The kids don't have the money. It's the adults that have the money. So, I mean, that's exactly why the scalpers know that it's the adults that are buying the packs. And when the adults are buying the packs, then they're willing to pay more money and they're willing to overpay. If it's the kids that want the packs, then I don't think there would be that many scalpers. So we're just losing, we're losing the flavor, the flair that Pokemon once had with its young audience and with its young buyers. It's just kind of sad.
No, it is. And that's why I circle back to, like we just said a second ago, I think it's okay to let Pokemon go for a bit, or really, like you said, really dive deep into the media that is unique.
Yep.
Like, Pokemon Concierge, I think, is a fun, fresh take on the franchise. Like, it's all stop motion. It's something unique that we haven't seen before. You know, I think that is a way. And honestly, dial back on the pack releases, man.
Hey, that's what I'm saying.
There's too much.
They have to have deadlines for that, dude. They have to. Like, it's like, we don't care how bad these pack releases are. We have to get them out because the new game's going to be coming out in a year, and we have these 10 pack releases that we have to do because we already promised people. It's like, no. If it's not going to be good, if it's not going to be a good product, if you can't release new great things, like, let's just take a pause, and I know they have to make money, but it's still just, I don't know, it just feels like they're doing too much. And I think that's on both the Western side and the Japanese side, because, I mean, they're getting the card ideas from somewhere, you know? Like,
absolutely. And where we have a disconnect in the West, it's completely integrated into, like, Japanese culture where...
Oh, yeah.
Every shop you go, 9.5 times out of 10, you're going to see something Pokemon related on the packaging, on marketing,
of course,
et cetera, because Japan has embraced anime as one of their biggest sources of marketing and income. So naturally they'd use Pokemon, etc. But like, we still have that disconnect. So I do think we need to put the fans, not the scalpers, because the scalpers are always going to do what they're going to do. But
yeah.
I think we as the fans need to put our money in the places where we want it to be seen the most. Like, not buying packs off of scalpers.
True.
Not necessarily getting every single Pokemon game. Unless you genuinely want to enjoy it, then that is completely different. But, yeah. Putting our attention in places where we think it'll make a bigger change, you know?
True. And to be honest, to end us out, I completely agree. I think Pokemon should put the fans first, and the fans should make a stand to say, look, we're not going to let these scalpers take the industry over. We're not going to let these scalpers force our demographic to pay this amount of money. It just is crazy.
Right.
To be honest, this has just been a pleasure. Again, I appreciate you coming on and doing this. This podcast, again, this episode should be out tomorrow, so definitely take a listen. You and the audience. Again, appreciate it so much. You guys, if you have the chance, make sure that you stick on this journey with us. We're going to have an episode come out every week. And again, we appreciate you here at Slice of Anime Life, and we will see you next week. Thanks, Avery.
And real quick, before we head out,
yeah.
I do want to get a chance to do two things.
Sounds good.
I know that you've definitely got some manga readers out there. So
true.
I would like
yes,
to
please. Yes, yes, yes.
I would like to recommend four of series that I highly recommend.
Let's do it.
First, let's do so the first would be 20th Century Boys. I love that series.
Yep, you've told me about that before. I like that too.
It's so good, man. It's so good. And then that is an older series, so if you want to like go back in time a little bit, I would highly recommend that. And then three newer manga series that are still like currently being worked on would be Full Knight, Blood on the Tracks,
okay,
and Gachiakara. I think those are four manga series that I recommend because they definitely provide a very well-written story that's well-paced.
So I have talked about Gachiakata on the show, on the podcast before. They just released an anime, you know that, right?
Oh, yeah, the anime just came out.
Yeah,
I'm
assuming it's a lot different, but...
Yeah, no, I do look forward to watching that, but I think I want to stick with the manga first and then
definitely
maybe check out the anime, because the manga is so good.
Heck yeah, dude. I mean...
And then if you... Oh, go ahead.
No, I'll let you finish.
And if you guys want to stay up to date with the projects I'm working on or anime projects I'm hopefully going to be showing soon, you can follow me on Instagram at underscore koiboylivin. And my website is www.astroblast.com with Z's. That is where I like to keep a lot of my work up to date. And I post once in a while because a lot of the projects I'm working on take a lot of time. But I like to show a lot of my progress there.
Well, again, I hope that those who are listening and didn't end up not or end up stopping the podcast after I had kind of signed us off. Hopefully you stuck around for this. If anything, Avery, we'll tag your stuff below in the podcast, since it'll be on Apple, Spotify, all these different places. So hopefully you stuck around. We're able to get some cool manga options, and also go check him out on Instagram and on his website. Definitely worth a look. And again, Avery, thank you for being on the podcast, and I appreciate you so much.
Absolutely, man. It's been so much fun, and this has been a great opportunity.
Heck yeah.